Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. We have a great show for you today. First up, we have an update in the Richard Allen matter. That's right, the Delphi case. More charges in the death of the deceased child, Madeline Soto. And yes, castration should be an option for these type of offenses. And yes, this appears to be a first of its kind, an AI hoax to get somebody in trouble. We're going to give you a crime talk travel pointer. This will go, it'll carry you a long way. Trust me on this. And then our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it.
Hi, lawyer. Lawyer. Lawyer.
Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thank you for joining us. I hope you have had a great week, and I hope you have some big plans for the weekend ahead. Yes, it is Friday, and whew, has it been a long week. Anyway, let's go ahead and remind you that, remember, subscribe if you haven't, like if you do, leave me a comment below, and hit that little bell for notifications. We get that all the time where people say, I'm not getting my notifications, Scott. I thought you were not putting up videos anymore. I thought you didn't put out a video all week. So hit that little bell. Make sure you're getting notices that when we put up stuff, and it helps out the old algorithm and, you know, maybe makes us think that you're actually going to watch this stuff, that we should continue to keep doing it. All right. Okay, let's go ahead and get to the docket today for April 26, 2024. First on the docket, our update on the Richard Allen case. All right, Special Judge Francis C. Gull has approved a subpoena that grants the Carroll County prosecutors access to personnel records of the former Rushville police chief as part of the investigation as it relates to the Delphi double homicide case. Prosecutors believe that Todd Click's investigation into whether Odinists were involved in the killing will make him a witness for Richard Allen's defense. So, in a motion filed this week, prosecutors indicate that Click's employee records will show cases of untruthfulness and credibility problems. So, the judge has ordered that the Rushville Police Department to turn over those records to the prosecutors within 30 days. Now, we got some more Delphi news for you, but let's talk about that. Isn't that interesting? Now, I understand some jurisdictions are very different, but in one of the jurisdictions that I practice primarily in, if an officer has an issue related to their truthfulness or some sort of personnel misconduct that would be in their personnel file, we get a little asterisk that says there may be something worth noting. So you then send over a subpoena and you show up to court, and then the prosecutor moves to quash the subpoena, saying, well, you don't know what you're looking for. And it's like, well, I don't know this specific incident, Your Honor, but I do know that there is something there because the district attorney's office told me by indicating this little asterisk here. And then, of course, the judge will usually deny the subpoena, quash the subpoena, so you cannot get access to that because you don't know the specific instance of this misconduct and whether it's related to this, and therefore it's just a big fishing expedition. But apparently somebody in that police department must have tipped off the prosecutors to say, hey, this detective must have something in his file. Go get it. I always think that's interesting as well, because if the government wants something subpoenaed, they get it just like that. The defense always gets their motions quashed. We'll wait and see. It's going to be interesting. Next, the Delphi suspect, Richard Allen's attorneys, want prosecutors sanctioned for what they're calling not turning over the evidence in a timely manner. Apparently, that includes preventing the jury from seeing video taken from one of the victim's cell phones. Now, the attorneys for Mr. Allen allege that evidence they recently found buried in other reports indicates that an Indiana State Police detective was in contact with the Manatee County, Florida Sheriff's Office about what they call a third-party suspect. They allege that the Florida police sent a tech to get a pair of the suspect's jeans that appear to have blood on them. Now, Allen's attorneys allege that they haven't found anything to indicate whether the Indiana State Police ever tried to test the blood for DNA or where that report would actually be found. The attorneys for Richard Allen also allege that the data taken from Liberty German's cell phone contained images of Abigail Williams and a purported suspect that was taken at 2:13 on the afternoon where the girls were murdered. That evidence wasn't given to defense attorneys until September 8th of last year, roughly 9 months ago, later than what was mandated by the rules. Now, the attorneys are also asking the judge to sanction the prosecutors by instructing the jury that prosecutors had the evidence and that it tended to exonerate Mr. Allen on May 1st, but they didn't turn it over for his attorneys for 4 months, which is in violation of the rules. I'm not sure they're going to get a jury instruction for that, but it's certainly ripe for cross-examination. The attorneys also want the judge to prevent prosecutors from using any data or information taken from Liberty German's cell phone during the trial. I'm not sure how the defense intends to do that other than this sanction, but I don't believe that the court is going to grant a sanction for late discovery. The remedy is not a sanction of don't use it necessarily, but the judge would say, are you asking for a continuance, Mr. Allen and attorneys? That's really the sanction, a continuance. So I know you would think, hey, you didn't turn it over, you shouldn't be able to use it. But prosecutors oftentimes say, well, judge, there was no bad faith. It's a big case. We thought we turned it over. No harm, no foul. But if the defense wants a continuance, obviously we won't object. I know it's frustrating. You think the rules apply to everybody, but they don't. I was talking to a friend. He was in court on a particular matter. It doesn't matter, but the judge set certain deadlines, and the other party hadn't complied with any of the rules, and the hearing had to be continued. And my friend said, well, you know, judge, when I see a court order, I'd say you shall comply. You shall do what is ordered to do by a certain date. But yet the other party doesn't seem to do so, and there's never any sanctions. And the judge kind of like, well, you know, I guess I kind of see that these orders aren't being complied with and that people just poo-poo them. But that's what happens when judges don't enforce those orders. I was once told by a judge, I really appreciate you filing the response that she had requested by a particular date. And I said, well, why wouldn't I? It's a court order. And she said, oh, you'd be surprised. So it's the judges that need to hold the attorneys accountable so that people actually comply with the orders. And they turn discovery over when it was supposed to be turned over. Just something to think about, ladies and gentlemen. Next, a Florida man is facing dozens of sexual assault charges in connection with the February killing of 13-year-old Madeline Maddie Soto, is now charged with capital murder in her death. Stephen Stearns, who's already accused of 60 child sex abuse-related charges, has now been charged with first-degree murder. Now, according to the court records, the Kissimmee Police Department and the Orange County Sheriff's Office initially arrested Stearns in connection to the case back on February 29th of this year. Now, Madeline Maddie Soto disappeared on February 26th from the home that she resided in Kissimmee, Florida, which is about 20 miles south of Orlando, and the girl's body was found on March 1st. Now, Mr. Stearns was the last person to see Maddie alive, according to the arrest affidavit. He is slated to be arraigned on the new charge next Monday, and if convicted of capital murder, that's right, he faces the death penalty. Just a general rule, ladies and gentlemen, in most places in the world, you harm a child, bad things happen to you. You kill a child in most parts of the world, well, bad things happen to you. Now, our next story is something that, well, if I take off my defense attorney hat and as a member of the community, I am all for this. So as a defense attorney, I may have to argue against this if this were to become too widespread, but I don't think it would where I particularly practice. But Louisiana, in this particular case, I think they've got it right. So a man from Springfield, Louisiana, has been sentenced to 50 years behind bars and physical castration after pleading guilty to the rape of a teenage girl. Now, according to the district attorney, Scott Perlou, P-E-R-R-I-L-L-O-U-X, this dude is 54 years old. He pled guilty to 4 counts of second-degree rape earlier in the month. Now, the investigation into Mr. Sullivan began back in July of 2022 after a young woman told detectives at the parish sheriff's office that Sullivan had raped her multiple times when she was just 14 years old. The teen became pregnant, and a DNA test confirmed that guess who the dad was? Surprise! Congratulations! That's right, Mr. Sullivan was the father. Now, through the investigation, the detectives also learned that Mr. Sullivan had groomed the victim and used threats of violence against her and her family to prevent the young woman from disclosing the rapes and the pregnancy. So, under Louisiana law, men convicted of certain rape offenses may be sentenced to either chemical or physical castration. That's right, surgical removal of their testicles. And Sullivan, apparently, understanding the errors of his ways, probably realizing that he won't be able to help himself, has reportedly accepted the latter. That's right, physical castration. Now, according to the statute in Louisiana, the castration will have to be done no later than 1 week prior to his release from custody, so they could do it immediately or they could wait. Now, the district attorney prosecuting the case said also that the Department of Corrections, this is going to be responsible for this procedure. But since Mr. Sullivan was given a 50-year prison sentence, obviously he's going to be 104 years old if he ever gets out. But as of right now, this guy is going to, the prosecutor said, hey, I'm not sure if this guy is going to get out given the length of the sentence and his age. But in the future, if he does, and he does get out early, well, everybody wants to make sure that, well, let's just put it that things aren't going to work for him in the future. So the prosecutor down there says, I want to say I've had 3 people ordered to be chemically castrated, but to my knowledge, this is the first physical castration to be ordered. And he felt that this case was a strong enough case that warranted such an action. The prosecutor noted, and I don't think many people would agree, that sex crimes against juveniles are the most malicious crimes that the district attorneys down there prosecute, and they intend to use every tool that the legislature is willing to give them, including physical castration, to make sure that the children are safe in their community. Needless to say, I say cut away. Get it over with. Do it now. Next, probably the first of its kind, an AI hoax. All right, so let's set the stage here. A former, now former, athletic director in a high school in Maryland was arrested in connection to an AI-generated impersonation of the school's principal. Dazhon, D-A-Z-H-O-N, Darian is the last name, faces charges including stalking, theft, disruption of school operations, and retaliation against a witness, according to the arrest affidavit. Police said the charges are in connection with an investigation that started back on January 17th into a voice recording circulated on social media that was alleged to have been the voice of the school principal, a guy by the name of Eric Eisworth. Now, police said the audio clip, which was an alleged race-based commentary on the school's students and teachers, was spread throughout social media. That led to the temporary removal of the principal from the school, as well as many hate-filled messages on social media, and there's a lot of calls to the school board as well. So the police said from the beginning, we have expressed our concern about the disturbing audio that has shaken the community there in Baltimore. And the police said Thursday afternoon that the detectives had conclusive evidence based on a forensic analysis by the FBI that the recording was not authentic. Police said the analysis indicated the recording contained traces of AI-generated content. The detectives then sought an additional analysis from the University of California, Berkeley, which arrived at the same findings as the FBI analysis. So the police investigators believe that Mr. Darien made the recording to retaliate against the principal, Mr. Eiswirth, who at the same time was investigating potential mishandling of school funds by Mr. Darien. So from the day the audio clip went out, though, Mr. Eiswirth told detectives he had an idea of who might be behind the recording. Now, the charging document states that Mr. Eiswirth believed Darien was responsible for the clip because he believed Darien was very tech savvy and familiar with AI and had a grievance fueled by Darien's contract not being renewed to work based upon performance issues that included terminating a coach without approval and allegedly paying teachers under the table for helping him with his job, which was the subject of an internal audit. The police weren't able to get into a lot of specifics as it relates to personnel details, but they are exploring additional charges given the impact that it had on the school community and black eye that the Baltimore County Public School superintendent believes has brought to their school district. Now, police said that the audio clip was originally sent to a friend group of three teachers. One of the teachers admitted sending that clip to a news outlet and to a student, right? A student who she knew would spread the word about the clip. Well, the investigation into the other teachers continues as well. And the Baltimore County leaders have addressed the scandal in the school district in a news conference. And they quote, "As you can imagine, this has been a very difficult time for the Pikesville High School community, Principal Eiswirth and his family, and the whole team at the school. Pikesville students expressed frustration with the scandal among their school leaders, and it feels really uncomfortable. The environment at the school starts to feel hostile more and more every day as they're here." Well, Darien, that's right, let's get back to the guy that apparently altered or created this AI rant on and spread it around, Mr. Darien. Well, guess what? He was apprehended Thursday at the Baltimore-Washington International Airport while he was going to go to Houston. Now, the police chief says we can't say whether he was attempting to flee or whether he had legitimate business. They're going to look into that. But the police chief did say that Darien had a firearm, which alerted the Maryland Transportation Authority because of the way the firearm was packaged for transport. The MDTA police then detained Mr. Darien after discovering the warrant for his arrest in the Pikesville case. The case appears to be one of the first of its kind nationwide, according to the district attorney, and stresses that the Maryland General Assembly, the legislature, needs to update state laws to catch up with the nefarious possibilities of the new technology. Now, the charge of disrupting school activity, well, that only carries a six-month sentence. But they're also looking into a much broader look as to the technology to see how it was abused and harmed other people. Now, after a court appearance this morning, Mr. Darien was released on a $5,000 unsecured bond. Oh, Mr. Prosecutor. I mean, this is an interesting case because in today's world of AI, it could be a little scary. So can you imagine all the recordings now that are going to have to come into court or video? You basically may have to bring in some evidence that this is the actual copy, a true and correct copy that has been altered in no way whatsoever. It's easier on a photograph, on a video, but when you start doing AI, how do you know it's, I mean, some of this stuff is so real. I can actually tell you, we looked into something like this where you can do it for your own voice and it's expensive, but you can do it and you apparently just read lots of words and then the AI figures out how you pronounce the words and how it sounds and what have you. And boom, they would think that I was giving the crime talk update on a daily basis. It's amazing, it's incredible, and scary all at the same time. obviously will give the former teacher the presumption of innocence, and it's going to be interesting. The legislature, though, and this is where it always gets unique, when a crime they believe is taking place, but there's no law for it, well, that's when you need a bold district attorney to push the bounds of a novel new legal theory instead of going to the legislature and saying, make this a crime. Yes, the first person, the second person may get away with it, but the legislature always comes in, fixes those little loopholes, but that's the way it's supposed to be. You have to be able to say, this conduct is prohibited. You can't say, well, you should have known it was prohibited. Or looking back in hindsight, don't you think the rest of the community would say it was wrongful not to be aware of what was taking place? Laws need to be specific so people know exactly what is prohibited. Next on the docket, a travel pointer from Crime Talk. Now, a lot of people travel outside of the country. And there's been a lot of talk lately about Turks and Caicos. And I'm telling you, Turks and Caicos is one of the most beautiful places on earth. And I mean that. It is amazing. I've never seen anything more gorgeous. Their beaches are amazing. It's crystal clear blue water. And it literally is like a swimming pool. It's so clear. And then you go out and the island's surrounded by a natural reef, and then it drops, you know, super deep, you know, thousands of feet. It's amazing. Absolutely gorgeous. And it's their country. They can make the laws that they want. And when you go to a foreign country, you need to follow the rules of that country. And I bring that up because there's been a lot of talk about Turks and Caicos and Americans letting their ammunition dangle about or be in a suitcase and say, oops, I didn't know. Because there's been another American that's been arrested in Turks and Caicos after a security screening found ammo in the bag during a guy that was on a cruise ship. And of course, you know, it's a sad picture because, well, he's a young dad. So Tyler Wenrich was charged on April 23rd after the bullets were discovered at a security checkpoint, leading to his arrest at the direction of the Royal Turks and Caicos Island Police Force. Now, this arrest comes just a week after the Oklahoma father of two, a guy by the name of Ryan Watson, was charged with the same offense as a handful of deer hunting bullets were found in his carry-on after American TSA agents didn't find them, but they found them going through the screening, leaving the country of Turks and Caicos. And Mr. Wenrich was arrested upon his return. Now, he appeared before the Grand Turks magistrate on Thursday this morning, and he was taken into custody at the island's Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation and has another court date in June 7th. Now, local reports did not specify if Mr. Wenrich claimed he did not know the bullets, which were not accompanied by a firearm, were in his luggage. His case appears to have been triggered by similar circumstances of Mr. Watson's arrest. Now, Mr. Watson was arrested on April 11th after he's going on his 40th birthday vacation with friends, turned into, well, not such a great birthday, after four loose hunting bullets were found on his carry-on luggage in his bag when going through security. This crime used to only carry a small fine. However, Turks and Caicos lawmakers bumped up those penalties back in 2022, and they said, guess what? There's a mandatory minimum of a 12-year sentence. Now, there's apparently been this surge in recent arrests, despite a warning sent out by the U.S. travel officials back in 2023 in response to this new law, alerting, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, telling Americans, check your luggage for those loose bullets and firearms. Because after he was jailed and was allowed to bail out of custody, Mr. Watson had his passport seized, and so he cannot leave the island. His wife was facing similar charges, but those were dropped probably because they knew she wasn't out hunting. I get it. What can you say? what I do is I have my travel bags. And if I have a bag that I was going to go to the shooting range with, that is the shooting range bag. And I would not let those two meet, okay? But I would tell you, if you are going to travel to a foreign land, I would get a new luggage. I would, even the old luggage, I would hold it upside down, shake it, go through it with a fine-tooth comb. When in doubt, if there's ever been a gun, an ammo in there in any way, find it. Don't take it there, okay? You don't do it. Because when you go to those foreign countries, I know everybody comes to America and everybody blows off the law here and nobody seems to care if it's being violated. Turks and Caicos apparently cares about their laws, the rule of law, and they want their citizens protected and they don't want stray bullets floating around. They could fall out of a suitcase. A small child could pick them up. Who knows? That's their prerogative in Turks and Caicos. And the, oh, I'm an American isn't a defense. It's okay. That's what most people say. It's okay. I'm an American, right? So whether you're a WNBA player going through Moscow, ooh, I didn't know those items were in my luggage, or you're an American going through Turks and Caicos, sometimes you have to, well, follow the law, okay? Let me tell you a quick story. I had a client years and years ago. Now, granted, he was not following the law, but he was arrested in Thailand for smuggling drugs. And he was sentenced not once, but twice to death because he smuggled drugs. And that's what the law requires there. And frankly, everybody knows about it. And if that's the law they want, they can do that. Needless to say, he didn't get put to death. I think his third time up on appeal, they reduced it. And there's some treaty, apparently, if you get arrested in some foreign land, that at some point the American government will let you come back and be repatriated into the United States. And that's how I met this individual. He messed up on his supervised release. But he spent 10 years in a Thai prison. I think the only bonus about that was that he was in a Thai prison, so he had to learn to speak Thai. But a Thai prison sounds like absolute hell. They feed you very little. You have to basically feed yourself, which was eating rats that were running through the prison system. Because I know, contrary to popular belief, like in America, that costs the you state anywhere from, I think the statistic I saw just the other day, $52,000 to house an inmate in the Department of Corrections. A lot of countries don't spend that kind of money on their inmates. Some countries, the family has to provide food and money and hygiene for the people that are in custody. So anyway, this guy ultimately gets released, has a lot of mental health issues because all of he's been through, his trauma, and I get that. The point being, ladies and gentlemen, when you travel to a foreign land, you are subject to the foreign laws. And you can't just say, it's okay, I'm an American. Now, these laws don't appear to have a knowing element. It's a strict liability offense. You possessed it, your bag, guilty. They can write the laws like that. Little travel advice, bone up on the laws of the country that you're going to. I personally have found that when I go to a foreign land, I am on my best behavior. I don't want to go to prison in a foreign land, and I certainly don't want to cause embarrassment and be arrested to my family. So I get it. It's unfortunate. Man, you're not in America anymore. Just saying. Next, our dumb criminal of the day. A Pennsylvania man was found with, 25,000 bags of heroin during a traffic stop. Yadale, Y-D-A-L-E, Thomas, was behind the wheel of a Ford Explorer when he pulled over for a small traffic infraction. And when he was questioned by the police, Mr. Thomas was described as extremely nervous, and his hands were visibly trembling. Well, needless to say that Mr. Thomas claimed that he was just returning home to the old Pittsburgh area after having driven earlier that day to Philadelphia, where he had sold a dog to a man at a gas station. Seems plausible. It could happen. However, based upon the highly trained senses and skills of the state trooper, he concluded that Mr. Thomas was being deceptive. The trooper noted that it cannot be overstated that Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is a source and location for the distribution of narcotics, and quite frankly, the regional epicenter for all criminal activity, and is a hotbed for wholesale narcotics and trafficking and stash houses. Basically, what that is saying is, ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia is an armpit, and that is where people go to get their drugs, and they spread it out amongst the community elsewhere. So as things went on, the police did run a check on Mr. Thomas, and it turned out, coincidentally, he had an extensive criminal history, including narcotic violations. As they say, past performance may be indicative of future results. So the police asked for permission to search Mr. Thomas's vehicle. And guess what? He declined. Mr. Thomas, you're maybe not so dumb after all. But anyway, what did the police officer do? He said, I think that there may be some narcotics trafficking going on here. I think there is some criminal activity afoot. And they called in a drug canine. Guess what? The canine alerted their handler to drugs in the car. Then, of course, they got a search warrant. And ta-da, 25,000 individually wrapped heroin. Like I said, three large bags containing suspected heroin packaged for resale at approximately 25,000 bags. A stamp bag contains a single dose of heroin. And of course, they will bring in their expert to say that 25,000 grams of individually wrapped heroin is not for your own personal use. That is indicia of possession with intent to distribute. Well, needless to say, Mr. Thomas was arrested on a variety of felony and misdemeanor charges, and he remains in custody on a $10,000 bond. Now, Mr. Thomas, guess why you are, in fact, our dumb criminal of the day? Was it because you were going to Philadelphia to sell a dog? No. And maybe you did. I don't know. But the point is here, you thought it would be a good idea to drive with 25,000 individually wrapped doses of heroin in your car, and then have the audacity to commit even the most minor of traffic infractions, which got you pulled over, okay? And I'm certainly not condoning drug dealing, Mr. Thomas, but if you're going to drive, and you're going to drive with drugs, make sure you use your turn signal. You turn that turn signal on 200 feet before you're going to change lanes or make that left or right turn. Drive the speed limit. Make sure all the lights are in working condition. Make sure that the little light on your license plate is on. No cracked windshield. Nothing hanging from the windshield, because those are all traffic infractions that can get you pulled over. And Mr. Thomas, with an extensive criminal history such as yours as it relates to drug trafficking, you knew better. So, sir, you are our dumb criminal of the day. Congratulations. You made it. That's all we have for today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I hope that you have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you Monday. And remember, the Constitution matters.